Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Cathal Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you this morning?
Very well.
Glad to hear it.
You got some good stuff for us today?
Well, I saw you run into a little late. We really didn't have any pre-show conversation today, and I have a suggestion for you.
Yes.
There's a new invention. This is from Stacy Schiff, who has written an article in a couple of places recently.
Is the new invention a faster car?
Same results. We're getting you here on time. She writes, if you believe it as I do that darkness shrouded the earth until someone thought to brew coffee at breakfast, at which time the stupor lifted, neurosurgeons engaged in the Enlightenment dawned. If you think that, then Robert Bohannon may be your new best friend. Dr. Bohannon is the North Carolina molecular biologist who 6 years ago sat down before a glass of milk and a donut. Guess he doesn't like coffee, and he thought, why not add caffeine to the donut?
Feed mayonnaise to the tuna.
Okay, with the help of a local baker, Dr. Bohannon set about attempting to create what he had already named the Buzz Donuts. Early results were disappointing, but now he's waiting for a Krispy Kreme and, what did he say here? All of this week, perfection has been achieved and patent filed.
I'm sure somebody's going to pick it up.
Dr. Bohannon,
I can almost guarantee you that you will see Dunkin' Donuts, Krispy Kreme, Starbucks. Somebody's going to pick this up.
Dr. Bohannon is now waiting for Krispy Kreme and Dunkin' Donuts to
and there you go.
To call. He's waiting for the call. They haven't said they're going to pick it up yet.
Why? Can I ask a question? And this is a serious question. If the only reason that you're having caffeine is to get the jolt from the caffeine, why not just take a caffeine pill?
Therein lies the rub.
Why do... Here's an 800-calorie caffeine pill.
I got a question
for
you.
Here you go. Good morning.
I got a question for you. How did this guy get a patent on this? It's a donut.
With caffeine.
Right. So I'm going to take a Pop-Tart when I go home, put caffeine on it, patent it. I'm going to take a glass of milk. I'll put caffeine in it. I'll patent it. Okay, stop. It's stupid. Okay, look.
It's not stupid. He may sell 1 million donuts. He may sell 100 million donuts.
I'm sorry. It's brilliant of him. It's stupid of the rest of us. The stupid lies in ourselves, Horatio, not in our stars. Look
at you quoting Dickens all the time. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Oh, gosh. That's funny. And if you didn't get the joke, you don't deserve to get the joke. But the question is, look, I like coffee. I don't drink decaf because what's the point, okay? Now, I understand I like the taste of coffee, but decaf, rarely is there a decaf that's delicious, you know? There's decaf that's acceptable, but I don't need, like, a hot beverage.
Yeah, there's something about the decaffeination process that...
It takes the subtlety and nuance out of great coffee. I love coffee. I love all sorts of things like that, like coffee and cigars and teas, and I'm just a glutton.
And I do like the way they make me feel, and I do enjoy, you know, that the wake-up effect of... And I'm more of a tea drinker than a coffee drinker, but I do like that effect of the caffeine and in there, and I can't say that I'm not addicted to caffeine. But I don't know a donut that's...
Well, the thing is, I'm not addicted to caffeine, but there's a difference between drinking a whole food stuff that has parts of the things that occur naturally in that food stuff that may have an effect on you. And, you know, busting it out into a pill and either taking it as a pill, because then it's a medicine or a supplement, or putting it in a different food stuff.
So I guess it's the difference between drinking gin and grain alcohol. You know, grain alcohol is there just solely to get you drunk. It has no other purpose, no flavor profile, and you put it in something just to get you drunk, where gin has aromatics and components to it that are interesting in among themselves.
Yeah, I agree. And I find it disturbing that we've lost... somehow it ties in for me with the basic understanding of food as a whole food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't like decaffeinated coffee, and I don't like caffeinated donuts. Okay? I just, the world is upside down, you know what I mean? I don't know. I think, again, as far as the effects on your body, actually caffeine doesn't have that much of an effect on me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I took caffeine pills to stay up for an exam in college, they would. Not that mm-hmm. I ever did that. But I actually took a diet supplement once, and I was like, wow, caffeine does have an effect on me. I feel like crap. Stop taking these.
The effect is definitely, if you have too much of it, that you don't feel very good.
But as far as drinking a cup of coffee, I mean, I bartended for years. You know, mm-hmm. I worked 12-hour shift, and then 3 o'clock in the morning, I'd have two double espressos as I was
17-hour shift. Are you kidding?
But I'd have two double espressos as I was cleaning up, go home and sleep like a baby in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Now I know...
the whole world is not like the way we are, as far as that goes.
But see, I accept the caffeine or the sugar or the chocolate will have an effect on me. And frankly, I accept the effect that wine has on me. But for me, when I drink something like coffee or drink something like wine, frankly, I would love it if wine could taste exactly as it did and be as complex and interesting and flavorful as it did and was like 2% alcohol mm-hmm. instead of 10 or 15% alcohol. I'd be 1,000,000 pounds to drink 3 bottles of wine a day. But you know, food. We've started to look at food too much like we look at drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different. There's a more, you know, whole foods is called whole foods for a reason because there's a whole holistic, not, you know, hippy dippy quartz crystals in New Hope, Pennsylvania hippie, but there's a whole way of looking at things. That's what holistic means, you know? It's like I eat real food. I eat apples and vegetables and, you know, whole foods, and I don't eat a lot of processed foods, and then I don't have to take all the supplements for the things that I don't get because I get them. Got it? Does that make any sense?
Some sense.
Yeah. All right, one final note. I want to just mention a review that I thought was a little unfair, that we both thought was a little unfair.
Mm-hmm.
This Sunday's New York Times in the Jersey section of the Times. So you guys outside New Jersey don't get this, but there's a local section stuffed into the Sunday papers. There was a restaurant called the Harbor Bar and Brasserie in Weehawken. Sounds terrible. But here, the reviewer...
Sounds like a place with a nice view.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's in a hotel. Mm-hmm. I mean, so I don't know that I have any great high expectations to begin with, but... this is from David Corcoran, who's a pretty good reviewer. And he starts the review. Now, here's a dialogue a restaurant critic doesn't have every day. Critic, : could I speak with your chef? Restaurant, : we don't have a chef. Critic, that's an excerpt from my phone conversation the other day with Tony Fant, president of the hotel arm of Hearts Mountain Industries, which runs the Harbor Bar and Brasserie in the Sheraton Suites Hotel in Lincoln Harbor. He explained the restaurant shared its executive chef, Nicholas Ciccone, with Hearts' other hotels, but that the company was looking for a full-time chef de cuisine to run the Harbor Bar. Okay, they're between chefs.
Yeah, I think... you can count this among your trips to the restaurant. You can go to the in and say, okay, well, when you didn't have a chef, this was the case.
Right.
But until the restaurant emerges from this transitionary period, to have this be their permanent record, because the Times is never going back to this place.
Or maybe in 2 or 3 years it might go back.
Well, unlikely, but unless the place has some sort of tremendous critical acclaim in the interim.
He gave him a satisfactory review, which is no stars.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is, I mean, like Mark said, look, they're not giving the food away for free while this guy is turning out what apparently, according to Corcoran, are really not very good meals. So, yes, I'm not saying that he should pretend like this visit didn't happen. But if you go as a critic to a restaurant and they're between chefs, you know that is an atypical experience. They're going to have a chef. I think that the critic needs to go back on a different night and then can talk about both experiences and maybe they
absolutely.
Get one star. Or maybe they still get a satisfactory.
Maybe they still get a satisfactory, absolutely. But you can't go there when a restaurant is in any type of transition and make that be the total review.
And you know that we as restaurateurs and restaurant owners, we're often defending a critic's right to bash a restaurant, even if it's our own. Critics are entitled to their opinion, and having strong critical base is what makes... a great restaurant scene, helps to make a great restaurant scene strong and thrive. I just think this was a little unfair. Anyway, we'll be back in just a moment talking with one of the best chefs in New York, Michael Salakis. He's one of the best has really changed the way we look at Greek cuisine in the Northeast and in the United States. Back in just a moment. 1450 WCTC, the time is 11:16.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450 WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're joined today by Michael Salakis. He's owner and chef of New York City's Anthos and Kefi restaurants. Anthos was the first Greek restaurant outside of Greece to receive a Michelin star, and he's a pretty big deal.
Michael, welcome to the show. Michael, welcome to the show again.
So about the Buzz Donut. I had more to say, and if I didn't, I'm going to make something up. We lost Michael.
Somehow we lost Michael. I'm sure he'll be right back.
While we get him back on the air, I want to go back to the. We were talking about the review of that was a little heart wrenching. we want to go back to the restaurant is called the Harbor Bar and Brasserie in Harbor Boulevard in Weehawken. That's at harborbar.com, and it got a satisfactory. Now I'll tell you something about satisfactory reviews.
They're not satisfactory?
Oh, man. the satisfactory is no stars.
Right. It's better than fair.
There is poor.
Right.
There is poor.
Right.
You don't want to get a poor.
No,
poor. The negative stars with poors. I have to say, you know, when you read these reviews, sometimes they can be interesting. And what's funny and what restaurateurs often criticize papers for doing is writing negative reviews because negative reviews sell more papers.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the review of this restaurant? It was great. Yeah, I saw it. Maybe we'll go there one day.
Well, I think this...
I'm making a point.
Go ahead.
As opposed to, did you see the review where they said, you know, there was a cockroach in the restaurant and the chef came out and punched a guy in the nose and the food was awful and the reviewer got sick? You go out and buy the paper.
Yeah.
You know, those, it's been proven, get sent from person to person more.
Well, you also see the four-star reviews. You get those out there, too, just because there are so few.
But there are more satisfactories than four stars. But the point of the matter was, this doesn't really strike fear into the heart of restaurateurs. It's owned by Hearts Mountain Company. You know, it's not like, it ain't a mom and pop somewhere.
Hearts Mountain Company is going to be just fine, even with or without this review.
But you can't give a satisfactory review when you're between
when there's
chefs.
No chef.
It just doesn't matter. Hey, listen, we're going to come back after a short break, and then we are really going to get on the phone with Michael Salakis and talk about Greek food in New York. Back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:22.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The matagat and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants. Michael Salakis is still owner and chef of New York City's Anthos and Kefi Restaurants. Anthos is the first restaurant outside of Greece to receive a Michelin star.
Michael, again, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. You're doing new stuff, and it doesn't involve necessarily foams and molecular gastronomy. And
yeah, that's not my gig. It's interesting. It's just not my thing.
Now, you got a Michelin star, and for those of our listeners who don't realize how important that is, there are only like 40 Michelin stars in New York altogether, 40
yeah.
Michelin starred restaurants in New York altogether. That's a pretty big deal. Did that have a big effect on the restaurant, or is Michelin relevant in New York yet?
No, I mean, for me and the restaurant, it's been unbelievable. It's quite an accomplishment. You know, when we first opened up the restaurant, we made a list of goals that we wanted to try and achieve. One of them was to get a Michelin star for Greek food. It's even a bigger accomplishment because there's only one other guy in the whole world that actually has a Michelin star. So it was, something that we were shooting for. We actually got it. And, you know, you don't really know how it's going to affect you, but not only from a business standpoint, but from a human resource standpoint, it's really helped tremendously. I mean, we're getting calls now from all over the world from chefs who want to come and do stages in the kitchen, which is a fantastic thing.
when you talk about publicity, and Francis and I obviously talk about it a lot in the restaurant world, I think people don't realize sometimes how important that your name being out there is important, not just to, as you said, bring in customers, but it also brings in this wealth of talent which helps support the organization and perpetuate it.
What most people really don't understand, especially about high-end restaurants, is that our cost structure is just astronomically high. And one of the things that really, really helps to bring that cost structure down is to have the ability to have a restaurant that generates a tremendous amount of critical attention. And when that happens, what you can do from a culinary standpoint is you start to use the kitchen as a learning ground, as an educational tool. And people, cooks, young cooks especially, want to come in and work in these restaurants. It helps them build their resume. They know they're going to get a certain type of cooking that's going on. We're going to be using certain ingredients. They're going to be using certain types of equipment that you typically don't find in the average restaurant. So, you know, when you start to garner these sort of critical acclaims, what ends up happening is that you're opening the doors to all these young guys who want to come out and who want to cook and who basically live and die by food to come in and walk through the doors and basically get paid a lot less for them to be able to work and learn.
But in exchange for that less pay, we're trying to offer a learning environment.
That's a huge learning environment. It's a win-win on both sides. You know, you just don't have that many restaurants, even here in New York City, that you could really come into, walk into, and really look at it as a place where you can, you know, learn and become a serious cook.
You know, it's funny. We, with our restaurants, we talk to people very often, and I often encounter young culinary school grads who come out and say, well, you know, I have an offer from the hotel at $17 an hour. And I said, well, that's great. You can go to the hotel and make $17 an hour. As the
omelet guy on Sunday,
yeah.
Sunday afternoon.
It depends what you want to accomplish, you know. I mean, everybody's different, and the restaurant industry has a world of opportunities for all these different types, you know.
Well, and I just want to say that I'm not putting that down, or I'm not denigrating
exactly
that choice at
yeah
all.
Know that it's a choice.
It is a choice, no question about it.
But there's a trade-off to go work in a great restaurant, and apprenticeship, whether you went to culinary school or not, apprenticeship is you cannot be a great chef without some level of apprenticeship, or at least most people can't. I mean, do you find that's the case?
I think it's a very important thing. I mean, I never went to culinary school, and I, you know, unfortunately never, my path into the kitchen was a weird, crazy path, and I never had the opportunity to do any apprenticeship anywhere. And I kind of feel like I would even be better than I am right now if I had that opportunity. I can't put enough weight on young cooks getting out there and going into these kitchens that provide these type of learning experiences. And, you know, I would even recommend getting out there and going over to Europe and doing a stage. Work for free. Work for nothing. Sit in front of a step. Wait for a chef to, you know, say, okay, you can peel a potato. And even with the kids that I get coming in here, or even, you know, older cooks, you know, there's always an opportunity in a restaurant to come in and learn. It doesn't mean that just because it's your day off, you have to take that day off.
We're gonna be back right after the news and talk more with Chef Michael Salakis, who's the preeminent Greek chef in America and one of the preeminent Greek chefs in the world. And we're going to talk about how he turned the restaurateur's worst nightmare into the basis of a career as one of the top chefs in New York City. Back after the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Cafe Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Today, we're talking with Chef Michael Salakis. He's chef and owner of New York City's Anthos and Kefi restaurants. Anthos is the first Greek restaurant outside of Greece to receive a Michelin star and one of the best restaurants in New York. You know, we were talking before the break Michael, about one of the things about being recognized as the best and being in that elite class of restaurants is you get culinary students from all over the world who want to come and work with you for a while to learn what you do. And each of them contribute to you as well. You get chefs from around the world who want to come and stage or do a stagiaire or spend a little time in your kitchen learning about what you do and exchanging ideas.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably one of the most interesting and coolest things that starts to happen is, you know, it's almost as if you're taking their experiences and you're bringing it to you. And I'll be the first guy to say that, you know, a lot of the stuff that we do is things that get picked up through, you know, people that have worked in other kitchens and have had the opportunity to work with other great chefs. And I mean, we're doing this clarification technique right now, which works with gelatin, and it's an amazing thing. There's no more rafts. There's no more anything. The end result is just fantastic, and it's a technique that I wouldn't have ever thought of or even attempted had it not been for one of the line cooks that did a stage at WD-50 with Wiley. So, you know, even though, you know, we're working at a very high level, we don't know everything, and, you know, we teach and we learn still, even at this level.
You know, it's amazing that it is an exchange of ideas, and sort of to be involved in that is sort of the lifeblood of being great. Can you tell us about that clarification technique?
Basically, what you're doing there is you're saying to yourself, and it makes a tremendous amount of sense when you think about it just for a little bit, is that you're taking whatever kind of liquid that you would like to clarify, and you're adding a gelatin to it, and then you're taking that gelatin and that gelatin-liquid combination, and you're freezing it. And what ends up happening is that the gelatin freezes quicker than the liquid does, and it acts as a raft, and it floats to the top, and it freezes up top. Then you take it, and you put it back into a refrigerator, and you let it melt. Well, what happens to gelatin in the refrigerator? It doesn't melt.
Right.
So the liquid goes through the cheesecloth and goes down, and the gelatin stays as a raft on this cheesecloth. But now you haven't had to influence that stock, that liquid, in any way whatsoever. You don't have to touch it with heat. You don't have to. You just get, you know, very, very pristine, intense, beautifully colored. You don't lose anything.
And it's cold clarification.
Cold clarifications. It's really, you know, an unbelievable technique.
I'm going to try and use it as soon as you go back to the restaurant. Sometimes we show those ideas on the radio. Well, you know what's funny that I want to talk about just for a moment, I want to get your take on, is sometimes, I mentioned, you know, the young culinary student comes out of maybe CIA or an expensive culinary school, and they come in and they say, okay, well, I love what you do, I'd love to work here, but, you know, I the hotel chain offered me $15 an hour to be the new pastry extern, or $17 an hour, and I have a big student loan, so I need to make that. I'm like, well, you don't make that working here. What you make here is, you know, $10 an hour, and you
if
know,
you're lucky,
right? Exactly. What you make here is minimum wage, basically, and you work your butt off for it, but you learn a lot. And I find that what's sad to me is there are culinary students who get out of culinary school, they have that big debt, and they can't take that low-paying job, which they need to do in order to learn. Do you find that as well?
Well, I mean, you know, these schools do cost a tremendous amount of money, and I'm a big believer in them. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think it's a wonderful experience. If I had it all over to do again, I would go through the traditional route. But I think it's just really a function of choice. I mean, if you really, really want it, you're going to make it happen, you know. It just depends on what kind of clothes you want to wear and where do you want to live and, you know, the lifestyle you want to lead while you're learning. You know, I mean, I put in 15 years in the restaurant business. I worked 3 of those years, 7 days, lunch and dinner from morning till night, 15, 16 hours a day. I have 2 restaurants right now, opening up a 3rd and a 4th by the end of this year, and I'm still working 6 days a week, 16 hours a day. So, you know, it doesn't end. It's a lifetime commitment. If you're going to do it at this level, you really have to love it. You know, I'll be very honest with you. Simple interview question for me when I'm talking to young cooks coming in is, what do you like to do? And I get, oh, I love to play guitar, and I like to write music, and I like to play video games or whatever else. And you know what? It's just the wrong answer.
Mm-hmm.
It's the wrong answer. There's only one right answer. And if you don't love to cook, if you don't think about it when you're in the toilet in the morning taking a shower, doing your daily chores, if it's not about food 24/7, then how the hell are you going to be able to compete at this level?
And how do you work 16 hours a day in that in that milieu if you don't love it?
Because your guitar's collecting dust in the corner, son.
It's like really sacrificial in so many different ways. To me, it's like, you know, it's an addiction. It's heroin, just in a different form. My wife, you know, will be the first person to tell you that in the hierarchy of love, there's restaurants, food, and her. And, that's the order that it goes in. And it's just, unfortunately, the reality of our lives, when you're playing at the highest level, just like anything else. I remember when Agassi retired and they asked him, what does it feel like to be retired? He said, well, for the first time, I don't have to worry about, whether I can eat this or I shouldn't eat this or whether I should be spending more time training or thinking about the sport or whatever. It's like constant. It never, never ends. And until you're ready to hang up, the clogs or whatever, the knives, it's just, you need to focus and you need to maintain that level of integrity. It's intense.
Well, let's talk about what brought you to the Rangers to begin with. You started as strictly a front-of-house guy, and there was a traumatic experience that you encountered. There was a cathartic moment.
It was a black day. We call it a black day right now, man. It was crazy, but the chef decided not to come to work, and he decided to open up a restaurant and not tell me anything. And it took his sous chef with him and a line cook, so I went to work one day, and I saw a decimated kitchen waiting outside the restaurant. My immediate reaction was like, oh, my God, something happened. Is he okay? I started making phone calls, and a couple of hours later, it just dawned on me that he wasn't coming back. And, I did the best I could, but it was not easy, man.
You got to give me the background on this. So the guy is your chef for years, right?
He's my chef. He was probably my chef for about 5 years. I treated him like a son. I mean, what I didn't do for this guy, he went through cancer with me. He had a couple of children with me. I mean, chefs are like father figures to restaurateurs in general. When you're the owner, it really is, as a male anyway, from my end, I've been more a father figure and a mentor to more people than I could possibly ever imagine. But, it gets to the point where you're working so many hours and you're so close with these people that it's almost impossible not to develop a bond that's, above and beyond the normal working relationship. And this guy, had he come to me and said, listen, I want to do my own thing. I want to open my own restaurant. I would have not only shook his hand and congratulated him, but I would have helped him.
Mm-hmm. You were talking about working 16 hours a day. I think sometimes people don't realize that. I've just worked a 14-hour day, and now I'm going to spend 2 hours with my staff, nurturing them and teaching them at the end of that day.
At the end of the day,
To give them the things that they need.
So the guy he opens a restaurant, doesn't even call you that day to say, by the way, I quit right now?
He just, you know what it was? He was just embarrassed. I talked to him about it years later. It was lucky that my wife was there that day because I would have killed the guy. Angry. Angry is an understatement.
And at this point, you're a front-of-house guy. You don't have any experience at all as a chef. You're in a horrible position.
Yeah, it was really, honestly, a black day. I remember calling my wife and say, what are we going to do? I mean, we're in really big trouble here. We have, a reservation book full of people. And, you better get over here because I'm going to have to jump back there and see what I can do. Now, the first couple of days, it was mostly like helping them get their mise en place ready, chopping and peeling and, doing simple things. And, I put an ad in the paper and I started calling up headhunters and saying, I'm looking for a chef. And then I started to think to myself, like, this is crazy. I own this restaurant and I'm going to have this person called chef basically run my life. I mean, this is silly. I can't have this. So I said, at a minimum, I'm going to jump back there and I'm going to teach myself how to perform on the most basic level.
Right.
So,
well,
let's
take a quick break. But at a minimum, you were going to do that. But at a maximum, you were going to wind up being the most celebrated Greek chef in America. That was unexpected.
I didn't think that was going to be the case, but it's pretty cool at the end of the day.
It's pretty cool. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back more and talk with Michael Salakis about Greek food in America next and his two restaurants, Anthos and Kefi, and two more on the way. You'll be back with the Restaurant Guys in just a moment. 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:46. I think it's great that more and more restaurants are offering larger selections of wine by the glass. Unfortunately, I often find those by the glass wines flat or spoiled. It's been my experience that most wine preservation systems just don't work until now. The Vinfinity system was invented by Armando Luis, a mechanical engineer with over 25 years experience in the wine industry. Vinfinity has 3 US patents, but it's so simple I could kill myself for not inventing it first. Vinfinity creates a precise vacuum in the bottle that preserves the wine. Too much vacuum or too little and the wine is damaged. Vinfinity never needs gas and requires little maintenance. One Vinfinity system preserves any number of wines. We use just one system for both of our restaurants, and we're not alone. Some of the best restaurants in the country are taking on the Vinfinity system. The guest gets a large selection of wines by the glass in great condition, and the restaurant eliminates waste. Tell your favorite restaurant about it. If you own a restaurant, install it. Find out more at VinfinitySystem.com or call 201-988-5953.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. We're talking with Chef Michael Salakis, who's the preeminent Greek chef in America and one of the preeminent Greek chefs in the world. We're talking about the day that he was an owner, not a chef, of his restaurant, not trained as a chef in his restaurant, and, well, his chef, his line cook, and his sous chef just stopped coming to work and opened up a restaurant. Michael has gone on to become the preeminent Greek chef in America, one of the preeminent Greek chefs in the world. Michael, I just want one. I don't want to, you know, stay too mired in the past, but that guy that walked out on you, he doesn't have a Michelin star today,
no.
Does he?
No, he does. He has a couple of pizzerias. He's doing quite well for himself, but he has a couple of pizzerias out on Long Island.
So you get back behind the range, you call your wife, you're like, oh my God, the chef quit. I hung my suit in the closet, now I'm chopping leeks in the back. How did you discover that you had a real talent?
Well, in all honesty, my gut thing was, I got to get out there and I got to get some cookbooks and let's bring them back to the restaurant and start reading. So that's what I did. I mean, I probably have amassed over the years hundreds and hundreds of cookbooks. I still am an avid cookbook reader. I have cookbooks that are in languages that I don't know, and I go out and I get the translating dictionary and I read them from cover to cover. But one of the cookbooks that I came across was André Chatelier's Lutèce cookbook, and in the preface, and for all the young cooks, you got to read cookbooks. It's not just about recipes. For me, it's almost never about recipes. It's what it's trying to say, that cookbook. And every cookbook has a voice. But in the preface, he said two things, and it changed my life because it defined who I was. He said, number one, a true chef innately is a gift giver by nature. And I said, that's true. I mean, more than anything else in the whole world, I love to give gifts. I get so much joy out of giving gifts that I question philosophically whether or not it's something that I do for my personal pleasure as opposed to that other person's pleasure. And the second thing that he said was that people often ask him, how do you come up with these things, or how do you know how to cook this stuff, or, all these different questions about food. And he just said, I just know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? I just know it's a weird thing, for whatever reason, and I can't explain why. I just know what food's going to taste like when I'm thinking about it in my mind before we even try and put it together and cooking it. And it makes things a lot easier when you have that skill. I've just was fortunate and blessed. I've always loved cooking. I always enjoyed making breakfast for my mother and father when I was a little kid, or trying to cook dinner for girlfriends or whatever, but never on a professional level. And professional cooking and home cooking is really, really two different worlds apart.
You touch on something that I think that anybody can relate to. If you're great at just about anything, there's a sense of feel that you have. There's a sense of I know what's going to happen if these factors occur, and I'm sure that's true of chef. I know that's true in the restaurant. With me, when service is running well, I have a sense of feel. I know what's going to happen when you put all the factors into something. And I think that's true of a great baseball player, great chef, what have you.
Yeah, you just can't explain it. It's just a gift, and what ends up happening, and what I try and tell everybody, and the reason why I ask that simple question, what do you like to do, to young cooks that are interviewing for positions, it's that, in order for you to have a chance in today's world, because we're so competitive, you have to really pick that one thing that you really like. And oftentimes, that one thing that you really like to do is that one thing that you have a gift at. And we all have, I really believe this, we all have one thing. I mean, I have a master's in accounting. I went to school for all these years. I mean, my path into the restaurant business itself was a crazy one because I was on my way to law school. And, you know, all of this stuff kind of happened. And luckily, and I say this wholeheartedly, luckily, I found the thing that I love to do. And I wake up every morning and I go to work and I have a smile on my face. You know, who wants to live every day in dread? So, you know, pick that one thing that you really, you know, get excited about, that you think about all the time, that you defines you, and make that the thing that you do for work. Because, you know, it's the only way that you're going to be able to compete.
You know, my father used to say that, you know, you find a job that you love and you never work a day in your life.
I've
realized that that's crap, but it's actually, but you enjoy the work you do.
It's not like every day is a good day, right. But, you know, imagine going to work every day and doing something that you couldn't even stand. It's just dread.
Well, and I think that the thing about the reason that our culture is currently fascinated with the restaurant business and chefs and restaurateurs and winemakers and people like that is because you choose this because it's your passion.
Yeah.
And if it's not your passion, you can't be successful at it.
Yeah, they're feeding off of the energy. I mean, and now, especially with TV and, you know, all the other media that's focusing their attention on the restaurant industry, they finally get to see the passion. And I think that's what's making everybody movie stars today. It's all of a sudden the guy that had all this passion for all these years, because the guys that came before us had the same passion and maybe even more. Because they were sacrificing for a whole other reasons, and you know they didn't have the thought in the back of their mind that maybe I'll be an Iron Chef or maybe I'll have a TV show.
Right, they were never going to have a TV show.
I mean, it wasn't happening for them. They were never going to be celebrities.
Michael, we have to leave it there. I could talk to you for another 2 hours, but I'm afraid we have one more segment in the show, but we have to leave it there.
Thanks
for having me, man.
Hey, that's Chef Michael Salakis. His two restaurants are Anthos and Keffi. You can find out more about them on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We'll be back in just a minute. 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:56.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the restaurant guys. Michael Salakis has been called, the guy who was just on the show, he's been called the Mario Batali of Greek cuisine.
Big words.
I think it's cool when someone introduces a cuisine to New York that we know or to the country
or elevates it.
That we're familiar with in a very basic level and sort of a knockoff level, and really elevates it and then reinterprets it. And we didn't get a chance to talk to him much about Greek cuisine itself. Maybe we should have him back on the show to do that. That hour went by so fast.
We were just talking about service and restaurants
What he said about books, though, is interesting. And we've had a lot of authors on the show. We've had a number of authors on the show. And we've said a number of times, I thought it was interesting what he said. He said young cooks should get cookbooks, not for the recipes necessarily, but for the point of view and the statement. And he talked about the introduction of Andre Soltner's cookbook. But more and more you see people stating a philosophy of work, a philosophy of life, a philosophy of food, a philosophy of community.
Where you were 30 years ago, you got that philosophy through the recipes. And now there's a lifestyle section of the cookbook that kind of comes out there and gives you, I think, a better perspective from where the chef's coming.
And there's a real cross-pollination because most cookbooks now contextualize those recipes as opposed to just publishing a list of recipes. And more books about food that aren't necessarily cookbooks include recipes in context.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I think that's that makes a lot of sense.
That's a broader way of looking at it. I for my wedding, he was talking about getting cookbooks from other countries and in other languages. For my wedding, I had spent some time in France living with a couple of families. And for my wedding, they sent me cookbooks in French.
You don't read French that well, as I recall.
Well.
Especially measurements.
He was saying he read them all, no matter what language they were in.
Have an open those at your wedding.
I definitely prefer English.
Yeah, you know what? There's one book, one last plug. You can go on our website, and if you look up Cast Iron Cooking, the cookbook I've been referring to most, because I love cast iron cookware, is Cast Iron Cooking. We interviewed the author on the show, and it was a show. It wasn't a groundbreaking show, I'll be honest with you. One of our most downloaded shows, and the book is tremendous and easy. I love it. Everything from popcorn to stew to rabbits. It's awesome. All right, I hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 12 noon.